Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Alice Bryant, Phil Dierking, and myself. Katie Weaver will bring us this week's personal technology report. But first, here are Bruce Alpert and Dorothy Gundy.
This week, the U.S. Senate will vote on whether to accept Donald Trump's nomination for the Supreme Court. The president has asked Congress to approve federal judge Neil Gorsuch, who is 49 years old. If he is approved, Gorsuch will fill the position that has been open since February 2016, when Justice Antonin Scalia died. Under the U.S. Constitution, the president nominates Supreme Court justices, and Congress decides whether to approve them. If Gorsuch is approved, he will be permitted to stay on the court for the rest of his life and to help determine the meaning of the country's laws, including on disputed issues related to guns and abortion. He would restore the 5-4 conservative majority before Scalia's death. In the days leading up to the Senate's decision, many people are arguing about the vote. Two words especially are coming up: filibuster and nuclear option. Democrats, who in general do not support Gorsuch, are threatening to filibuster. And Republicans who support him are threatening to use the nuclear option. But what do these words mean?
A filibuster is a way of delaying a vote. The political party with the smaller number, or minority, in Congress can use it to prevent lawmakers from voting. The filibuster has been part of Senate rules since the 1800s. Historically, senators filibustered by speaking for many hours, often overnight, to block votes. For example, during the 1930s, Senator Huey Long of Louisiana spoke against bills he said favored the rich over the poor. Once he talked for 15 hours, the Senate Historical Office says. Long filled the time by reading from William Shakespeare's plays and sharing his favorite food recipes. Now, senators do not usually talk continuously to filibuster. Instead, they insist that the majority party come up with 60 votes to end debate and schedule a vote. If the majority party falls short of 60 votes, the vote is blocked. Democrats, who are in the minority party in the Senate, say they will filibuster the vote on Gorsuch.
But Republicans, who want Gorsuch to start hearing cases right away, are preparing to counter the Democrats' move. Under Senate rules, lawmakers can stop a filibuster. If 60 out of the 100 senators agree, debate can be stopped and a vote scheduled. But Republicans do not have the 60 votes to stop the Democrats' filibuster. Only 52 of the lawmakers are Republicans, and not enough Democrats will support their move to stop the filibuster. And that explains why Senate Republicans say they will use the nuclear option. In this case, the phrase means to change a rule in the Senate. Republicans will move to change a rule that would allow a simple majority of senators to end debate and schedule a vote. A rule change only requires a majority vote.
This change in Senate rules was first described as the nuclear option back in 2003. The reason, some compared a difficult political situation in the Senate to the Cold War between the U.S. and the former Soviet Union. It was said that nuclear deterrence, that both nations had enough nuclear weapons to destroy the other, meant neither country was likely to attack the other. Gregory Koger teaches political science at the University of Miami in Florida. As was the case with the Soviet Union and the U.S., Koger said, Democrats and Republicans know the party that approves the nuclear option will pay a price. For Republicans, it will come when Democrats reclaim the Senate majority and are able to confirm Supreme Court justices with a simple majority. Koger said the Senate has long worked on the common belief that nobody gets everything they want, and that compromise is needed to get things done. A vote to end the filibuster for Supreme Court judges, he said, signals the end of that way of doing things.
The current fight over the Gorsuch nomination goes back to the Obama administration. Republicans blocked votes on many judicial and administration nominees from President Barack Obama, a Democrat, particularly in his second term. Senate Democrats responded by changing Senate rules in 2013. No longer would 60 votes be needed to end a filibuster against judicial nominees and top positions in the government. But the filibuster remained available for Supreme Court nominations, a rule Senate Republicans are ready to change this week. I'm Bruce Alpert.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.
The smell of smoke from cooking fires has stayed in the memory of Ravindra Sunku. While growing up in Hyderabad, India, Sunku smelled too much oil and wood burning in his neighborhood. His neighbors were just cooking their meals. But years later, he wondered if his neighbors developed lung disease from breathing smoke from the cooking fuel. Now he is doing something about it. Sunku is a director at a technology company in Silicon Valley. An area south of San Francisco Bay, Silicon Valley is home to many of the biggest and best-known technology companies in the United States. Recently, Sunku used his technology skills to help Burn Manufacturing, a Kenyan company that makes stoves that burn less fuel. It hopes to make people healthier and to reduce the cutting of forests for firewood. Sunku recently told VOA that the cook stoves could have saved the lives of people in his childhood community in India. Sunku volunteered to help the Kenyan company through RippleWorks, a program in Silicon Valley. RippleWorks connects technology experts with groups around the world that have humanitarian goals.
RippleWorks has helped 28 projects, and it plans to help 40 more this year. The program chooses companies that work on improving education, healthcare, clean energy technology, and access to financial services. RippleWorks has helped companies like Neo Growth, a company in Mumbai, India, that provides loans to small businesses. It has also helped Zuna, a company that provides financial services to people in countries such as Malawi and Zambia. In Mexico City, RippleWorks has connected a technology marketing expert with Signify, a company providing credit to customers through mobile phones. RippleWorks identifies a specific problem for companies it helps. Then, it joins the company with an expert who has dealt with that problem before. RippleWorks manages the project and sets up weekly video conference meetings. Doug Galen is the co-founder and CEO of RippleWorks. He says the secret to his organization's success is managing projects to make sure everyone is doing their duties. RippleWorks helped Ravindra Sunku work with Burn Manufacturing.
Sunku came to the United States to attend school in Oklahoma. There, he received a master's degree in industrial engineering. He worked in a metal factory near Los Angeles before moving to the San Francisco area to develop computer programs. In California, he worked and raised a family. He also volunteered in his community. The work involved building a playground and filling bags of food to help the hungry. Then, through RippleWorks, he volunteered to work for 6 months with Burn Manufacturing. Sunku did not have to go to Kenya. He used video conferencing and other technology to communicate with the company. Since 2013, Burn Manufacturing has provided 250,000 cook stoves to African families. Burn Manufacturing has grown quickly, with a factory, employees, products, and customers since its start. It needed technology to manage information about things like sales, pay for employees, and supplies.
Once a week, Sunku arrived at work in San Francisco early in the morning for a video conference with Burn's chief financial officer and general manager. He also volunteered for 3 hours on the weekend, 2 hours on Burn projects, and 1 hour with the RippleWorks project manager. He helped Burn choose software. He also helped them develop processes for hiring technical help in Nairobi. After he saw that the managers were taking his advice, he found the job satisfying. The final part of Sunku's work with Byrne was a trip to Nairobi. He was able to take the trip because his job gives workers unlimited time off. Sunku is Director of Information Technology at Stitch Fix, a web company that makes clothing selections using technology. I never thought someone like me, originally from India, who moved to the U.S. and has been in this country for more than 30 years, would make a contribution to Africa, he said. I'm Phil Dierking.
And I'm Alice Bryant.
If you are a fan of emojis, you might enjoy Memoji. The new app turns photos of faces into emojis. If your friends are fans of emojis, you can turn their photos into emojis too. But if your friends are not fans of emojis, you can still turn their photos into emojis. Maybe then they will learn to like emojis. Memoji is a free app for iPhone that turns photos of faces into emojis. The app lets users choose from 11 different emojis, including happy, sad, cool, love, and even a rainbow unicorn. A Memoji app for Android is in development. Memojis can be saved as photos, GIFs, and videos. The app lets users save these to their phone and share them on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and other social media sites. Users also can send them directly to their friends in Facebook Messenger, text messages, and email. To use Memoji, first download it free from the iTunes App Store. Open the app and give it permission to access your photos. Tap the photo icon in the upper left corner of the screen. Choose from photos on your phone that show faces. The app does not recognize all face photos. If the app does not recognize a face in the photo you choose, try a different photo. The app only recognizes photos of human faces. If you try to use a photo of your dog or cat, you will get a message that suggests you try again with a human face. You can have fun with photos of friends using Memoji. If you choose a photo of a group of friends, only one face in the photo will get the emoji. Under the photo, you will see the 11 different emojis you can use. Swipe through to choose your favorite. Tap on the emoji to add it to the face in the photo. You can choose from laugh until you cry, angry, kiss, devil, laughing, sad crying, rainbow unicorn, feeling ill, love, sad, and cool. After you tap the emoji, the face in the photo will change according to the emoji you chose. The face moves to a smile, frown, or something else. An image might be added, such as tears, sunglasses, or a unicorn horn. For some emojis, the facial expression changes without an image being added. Keep tapping different emojis until you find the one you like. When you have chosen your favorite Memoji, you can save it and share it with others. Tap the arrow icon in the upper right corner of the screen. You will see choices of format for saving the image as a GIF, video, or image. GIF may be the most fun, but you can choose based on how you want to share the Memoji. After you choose the format, sharing and saving options will appear on the screen. I'm Katie Weaver.
Walk into most any classroom, and you will see a large world map hanging somewhere on the wall. Teachers use maps for subjects like geography and social studies. In the United States and other countries, school children have long learned from one kind of world map. It is called the Mercator projection. This version of map is more than 400 years old. Gerardus Mercator, a European mapmaker, designed it for the purpose of helping sailors and ships on the high seas. Today, the Mercator projection is the map of choice for modern-day direction-finding services like Apple Maps and Google Maps. It is also the map of choice in school classrooms and textbooks. But map experts and other people say the Mercator projection should not be used in schools. They say it does not correctly show the sizes of countries and continents. It is not an easy thing to show our three-dimensional planet in just two dimensions, length and width. Gerardus Mercator's 16th century method made countries far from Earth's equator appear larger than they are. Countries close to the equator appear small in comparison. On Mercator maps, for example, Africa appears smaller than North America. In reality, the African continent is larger than all of North America. Mercator maps also make Greenland appear bigger than China. In fact, China is about four times larger than Greenland. Now, school officials in the U.S. state of Massachusetts are replacing the Mercator map with one that presents a different view of the world. Boston Public Schools is America's oldest public school system. It is also the first known American school system to use the Gall-Peters projection world map. German historian Arno Peters worked on the projection in the 1970s. James Gall of Scotland first developed it in the middle 1800s. Peters' aim was to fix Mercator's problems with sizes. He believed that map showed what critics called a Eurocentric world view. Officials announced the change last month. Soon, Peter's world maps will hang in classrooms across the city. The change from Mercator to Peter's is part of the school system's efforts to decolonize the curriculum, said Colin Rose, an official with Boston Public Schools. He recently spoke with the Guardian newspaper. Hayden Frederick Clark is also with Boston Public Schools. He told National Public Radio that 86% of the school system's students are individuals of color. Maps such as the Mercator, he said, generally classify the places that they're from as small and insignificant. It only seems right that we would present them with an accurate view of themselves, he told NPR. Ward Kaiser is a writer, publisher, and an expert on maps. In 1983, his publishing business produced the first English language Peters maps in North America. Kaiser supports Boston Public Schools' decision to move beyond the Mercator projection.
I think on the whole, it is a great decision, a right decision, because it helps enlarge the understanding of those students.
Seeing a Peters map for the first time can be a strange experience. Land masses may look stretched compared to how they look on the Mercator and some other world maps. Kaiser says he expects Boston students to be surprised when they have their first look at a Peters map.
I hope that they will have an aha moment. My experience is that in any school where this new map, the Peters map, is being used, that does happen.
Every map has its purpose. At first, the main purpose of Gerardus Mercator's map was to help sailors get across the open seas without getting lost. It was not supposed to be an educational tool, Kaiser says.
When the map is used for other purposes than navigating, such as on classroom walls as a representation of the real world, that's like using a telephone to brush your teeth. It's the wrong use of the map.
He adds that the aim of the Peters projection was to show all countries, all regions, all continents at their actual size.
And people from Nigeria or Thailand or Venezuela can gain a sense of their own value in the world, their place. They are not shrunk down. They are not marginalized. They are treated with respect in that sense.
The Mercator and Peters projections are just two of many kinds of world maps that may hang in school classrooms. Many public schools in China, for example, use a map that shows East Asia near the center. Kaiser said it is human nature to view one's own place near the center of the world. Mercator himself put Germany, his adopted homeland, near the middle of his map. We all tend, no matter who we are, to see ourselves at the center of the world, he said. Maps are powerful tools, Kaiser says, and the map from which a student learns about the world can make a big difference in their understanding of and feelings toward others.
The world is not their oyster. The world belongs to everybody. And if we treat people with respect and understanding, we may even get a better set of relationships in the world.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.